This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Andy Campbell, who is located in England and is a very difficult person to describe. So I'm going to ask Andy to describe himself.
That's a difficult one. I don't know where to start. Well, I'm basically a writer that has always been interested in mixing writing with digital media, really. I kind of grew up with early home computers and I've always used computer to write with. And I've got quite a strong interest in other aspects of digital media as well, such as visual things and that interactivity.
And so when you say, I guess this is really an interesting point for me. So you've always worked as a digital writer?
Yes, I have, yeah.
And so, and how long have you been working in digital media?
Well, I mean, I grew up with very early home computers, really. Not particularly very early, but fairly early. My first computer was a Commodore 64. I was about 8 or 9 when we got that computer. And my interest in computers just kind of grew from there. And when I got into my teens, I started using an Amiga to write stories into a word processor, basically. But I was always interested in the idea that you didn't have to then take the writing to a printer. You could just leave it on screen and perhaps do other things with it.
Right. So in a certain way, and I don't want to kind of treat you as a sociological example. I don't mean this in any way that to seem that way. But, you know, many times people in the book business have talked about the transition from print media to digital and thinking about it being a generational condition. In other words, that if you've grown up with print, then you think of print primarily and first. It has primacy in your work. If you grow up in a digital environment, then you are a kind of different being. And in a certain sense, you define that by what you've just described. That for you, print was, and I guess I should then say that what, you know, the website that you have created, that I've become familiar with your work, through is called Dreaming Methods, dreamingmethods.com, and that's kind of an your most current expression, I think, of the digital creativity that you've been working on for all this time. And I think it's a really good example, and a kind of it just opens up different ways of thinking about both self-expression and the consumption of what we have to call writing. But I, you know, this sort of gets to the, and I want to go back to kind of the history of how you got here, but it does get me to this really, I think, critical question, and that is the labels that we use to describe the work that is being done. You know, that often I think we bring a language of description that is tied to our experience. So there isn't, that's why I said at the beginning, it's difficult to describe what you do because we don't have a kind of contextual language for doing that. You don't write books per se, and in a sense, you know, the objects that you create are really more experiential than textual. And so, and they're not even objects on a kind of commodity level, even though they might be objects in a more, you know, kind of meta-descriptive language, you know, meta-description of what you're doing. But as you see your work, I guess this would be important. The real question is, how do you describe the work you do?
Well, at the moment, I mean, the closest thing I can think of to describe it would be digital fiction. So a fictional experience, not necessarily always relying purely on writing, but certainly a digital fiction experience that can only be experienced on a computer. None of the work on Dreaming Methods would really work if it was printed out. It'd be incredibly difficult to try and even attempt to print some of it out.
That's right.
So it lives and breathes in the digital environment, really.
Right.
And it's kind of evolved to be like that. It's this very strange sort of twisted sort of hybrid path that I feel to have come through. But at the same time, I mean, I'm involved in one of the first writing literature prizes for a work that is has been created by a writer purely digitally. And I've had quite an interesting insight through the submission process of that prize into what kind of material is being produced by writers in this country purely in digital media. And the amount of submissions hasn't been vast, but what has been interesting is that there are a lot of writers doing it and the sorts of projects that people are trying to achieve.
Well, and do you find, and I guess this is a, you know, again, a sort of sideline, but, or side question, the people that are coming to you with digital projects, as you describe them, are these, like you, individuals who have really either never worked in print or who have migrated completely out of the print experience into, because they're attracted to or they find that the tools of digital creation are more appropriate to the way they want to be creators?
I think there's a mix, really. I mean, to me, there are two areas where this type of work is kind of flourishing at the moment, and that is there's a wave of new, younger writers, students, a lot of them, who are really, really curious about the whole idea of written work produced through digital devices or on computers, and they're quite fascinated with it and actually have kind of, like myself, grown up with computers being the way that you would produce a piece of written work from the beginning. So it's kind of like a new digitally born generation. And then there's also kind of an older generation who perhaps started getting into computers slightly later in life and have actually got a lot to say as writers and are very, very curious about the potential there. Some because perhaps they're disillusioned with the print industry and the publishing industry. Some because they just genuinely want to express themselves through these tools and that have a complete fascination with it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that resonates for me is I think back to when I began writing myself, which was, you know, probably like many people. I wrote most, most actively when I was in my late teens, early 20s. And at that time, I was interested in publishing. Because it was sort of an extension of the writing process. I wanted to either collect other people's work or find a way of getting my work into a context that made sense. And the tools at that time were evolving. You know, you could print on tabletop offset printers, and you could, you know, use Mimeo machines. It was kind of an empowering technology that increased the availability of access to creators. And in a certain sense, what you're describing now is, you know, that the publishing tools and the writing tools, the creativity tools that exist now digitally are attracting people today because they represent a kind of leapfrogging over the channels of distribution.
Yes.
You know, anybody with as what you've done. I mean, and there, you still have to be good at what you do. I think that's what really strikes me about your work is that it's one of the words you used on your website is immersive, and I think that's, you know, it's critical to do that. If all you're doing is creating a flat experience, then it really isn't taking advantage of the tools, but it's also not going to draw readers or, you know, viewers in, because the model that you are most similar to, and again, you reference this, is the film and web design that people are now so used to is itself extraordinarily creative and immersive and stunning. And if you're going to use the new web media tools, then you have to also be pretty good at it, I think.
Yes, I think so. You have to have quite a wide range of skills to be able to do it all yourself.
Yeah. Now, do you collaborate?
I was going to say, I mean, I'm not a very good collaborator. I mean, I've collaborated largely with my wife, which has worked really well. And I've also done a couple of projects with other authors and a poet, but they've never particularly gone that well, really.
Now, you see, the projects that you were talking about that are being submitted for this prize, are you seeing collaborative projects more in those submissions, or are they also, like you, individuals who are kind of creating their own universes in these
yeah.
multimedia forms.
Well, that's interesting because, again, it kind of reveals the wide open parameters for this type of work, really. But the submissions varied from individual authors who literally have tried to do everything themselves or mined from the internet to obtain things like audio files or bits of graphics to use in their projects when they've credited them as such. But from individual authors right across the spectrum to huge productions with cast and crew for the video aspects of it. So you're talking a massive difference between a single author approaching a piece of work like this and what's actually achievable by one person, and projects that have the backing of many, sometimes up to 100 people.
And do you think I guess for you, I'd ask that question too, is do you feel like there's the need to master so many skills, is that an impediment in other words, will this become, it's obviously easier for a writer, a person, to sit down in front of a word processor and express themselves individualistically than it is to sit down in front of a piece of software like Dreamweaver or some other tool set that you have to use to create an interactive website. So it seems like that level of sophistication of tool set will create, I guess I don't want to say, maybe impediment is the wrong word, but a kind of bar. It raises the bar enough so that you there's a certain selectivity that will occur.
I think current writers are much more kind of technologically savvy than they ever have been, really. I mean, even if you just use Word to write a piece of fiction, the amount of options in Microsoft Word these days is quite a lot. You know, it's quite bewildering the amount of options you have there for inserting images or even interactive bits and pieces. And I think writers probably now more than ever actually use these things and feel confident using them, and they're not fazed by them. So although they may still be working within the word processor environment and may still need to collaborate largely with other types of people, like artists or musicians, to be able to do something multimedia-like, they are definitely more technically savvy than they used to be, certainly, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that, you know, clearly, I mean, this goes to the notion of a generational change that, you know, if you've grown up, today, I don't know how it is in England, but in the U.S., if you go to an American high school, you have many opportunities to use software and become fairly proficient in it, that maybe for a generation 10 or 15 or 20 years older would be unimaginable. Kids are learning PowerPoint in a very sophisticated way, or they've been able to use Final Cut Pro, or there are just so many different tools that are available to them that it becomes kind of regular for them to do this work. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, I had so many questions for you, I probably won't be able to ask them all, but do you think about how people who are using other devices than computers will be able to experience your work? Is that important to you, or is it do you consider it irrelevant?
I think up until recently it hasn't been that important to me, really. I've quite liked producing work that's experienced on what I would perhaps class as a proper computer and monitor setup, a sort of multimedia computer setup, because I like the canvas for that. It's a big screen. You don't have too many technical restrictions, certainly not as many as you used to have. Work produced in Flash, if you're viewing on a computer, generally looks the same no matter which browser you're looking at it in, or it maintains a consistency, whereas a lot of web design doesn't. However, saying that, I mean, the increasing popularity of devices like the iPad and iPhones and little devices that are coming out, I mean, it is increasingly of concern to me to be able to try and access these things and produce work for them. They have very, very low processing capabilities, processing power, compared to a desktop computer. So I can't imagine some of very, very rich multimedia work that's on Dreaming Methods, and some of it really does push even Flash.
Yeah, I've noticed
that. Just would not cope on these little lightweight devices. So.
Right, and of course Apple doesn't support Flash at all. And
that's right, yeah. Although they have reversed their decision to ban third-party developers, so you can export an app from Flash.
Right.
But of course they'll still have a good look at it, I'm sure.
Right, and of course, as you pointed out, I mean, I noticed when I've loaded your files, I've used some of your software, it takes a while to load. These are big files. This is not stuff that maybe will run successfully in smaller devices.
That's right, yeah.
So just in terms of your kind of the kind of range of work that you do, do you also hire out as a creator? I mean, how do you make your living? I assume that it's not possible to do that from new media in the forms that you create yourself for exploration.
No, I mean, for a living, I design websites and do quite a lot of print design work and film graphic work. So my work is actually still in the digital area, but this can be quite helpful really when it comes to learning new skills and learning new bits of software that I'm always looking at with a creative eye for spare time as well. So it's quite nice to be in the same sphere, although it does mean that I spend a hell of a lot of time in front of the computer, which can't be that good for me, really.
Right, you don't get outside much.
In terms of Dreaming Methods actually making any money, I mean, it's an interesting one, really, because the only money that we've actually made from Dreaming Methods has been through the odd commission for exhibition work. One or two of the pieces have been installed in exhibitions internationally, which has been quite nice. Although I've never actually been to one and actually seen it, so. But we've also we're selling a resource pack for some of the source code for the projects as well, which is doing pretty well. We have quite a lot of students interested in purchasing some of the source code for some of the Flash projects on the site, so that's been quite nice.
I actually think that also is something that will evolve, and I think that's really interesting to me that, you know, for many people, the ability to master the software may not be possible or even desirable. They may not have the deep connection and experience that you have, and it seems like there will be more tools made available through the kind of work you're doing that would enable, let's say I would be a good example. I'm pretty proficient with software, but there's no way I want to know as much as you do about how things really work. And I could never be as proficient as a real designer. So if I wanted to create a kind of multimedia immersive narrative, which I might be interested in doing, I would have to buy software that would enable me to do that. And I think I'm not alone. I think that, in fact, more and more that will be a kind of empowering, an empowerment for creators.
Because, I feel quite lucky in some respects to have been able to be able to have all this software just at my disposal that I've, sort of earned through commercial work, really, and need to use for commercial work. So it's nice just to have those tools, and I do feel very privileged to be able to just have all those to hand. I mean, quite a lot of the submissions to the prize, just going back to that, were actually from students who obviously are not going to have big budgets to be able to purchase software for their needs, but have been very creative in their use of free tools across the internet to try and put rich media together. There's a site called Wix, which allows you to create your own Flash site for free. You know, some very, very interesting uses of projects like that on the internet, which are completely open to anyone who just wants to tinker around, really.
No, I think that's really interesting. And of course, but to go back to this notion of not being able to describe and label the kinds of work that's being done, it's also true that the distribution channels and ability for both the creator to find more an audience, and for the audience to even know about the different kind of levels and different versions of creativity that are being done, it is really a challenge. You know that we have so much going on, and there's I mean, I see it as an explosion of riches, you know, that the web has enabled creativity on a level that's probably never been seen in the history of humanity.
Sure.
And but that also comes with this the difficulty for both sides of the equation to, you know, how to find and how to be found. And
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of then, and of course writers, artists, creators are not always either adept at that part of the work or have time. I mean, if you're spending
yeah.
your time creating, how are you going to spend time looking for readers?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. I mean, the closest thing I've found really on the internet that tries to cluster this type of work together, certainly the electronic literature, digital fiction type work, is the Electronic Literature Directory. But I mean, in some respects, the directory doesn't have the same buzz and excitement and sort of backing that something like the Apple iTunes store has, for instance, which in a way you need something a little bit like that for this type of work, something that really gives it a buzz of excitement and gives it a kind of a thrill to even look at, you know, to just discover and to be able to discover it really easily because it's so patchy where it is across the internet. I mean, the amount of people that stumble across Dreaming Methods, it's probably number one on stumbleupon.com. It just doesn't have the backing to be able to distribute itself, promote itself, or anything, really.
Right. I know. I wonder if what would happen is that a kind of web, internet version of what a retail store would be merge. In other words, that you know, what people need and what creators need is an aggregator. You know, someone who would, in fact, gather and create that energy and also have an interest in and desire and need in, you know, kind of maybe commercially to become an exponent, a promoter, a marketer for not only the individual works, but for the idea itself of kind of interactive multimedia digital fiction or writing. You know, maybe there's someone who will want to do that.
Sure. I think it needs to be understood as a concept, really. Somebody needs to really get their head around it and disassociate it, I think, from a lot of the association it has at the moment with books.
Yeah.
Really. Because books at the moment are generating endlessly cyclic kind of comments on blogs and forums where people are being given sort of the random examples of interactive digital fiction, and then the immediate reaction is to compare that with a physical book and say how they can't read it in the bath and why would they want to do that, they just want to take it on holiday and read, and you know, all these reasons that in a way it's an unfair comparison because the experiences are so different.
Well, and also if people, I think if you get out of the context of book and into more the context of consumption of information and ideas digitally, then your comparative is more like YouTube or Facebook or some of the other websites that people spend a lot of time on. That,
sure.
You know, people are in fact consuming vast quantities of digital information and entertainment. And so it's really, as you say, unfair in a certain sense to compare what you're doing to what a book is or could be. And really, your context is much more the web itself or the computer itself. And that may be, you know, in other words, it's not literature that is your competition, but more other forms of digital media.
Yes, I think that's right, yeah.
I still think that literature has to be expansive and grow and think about the future of communication and expression, so that it's not simply itself as a kind of cultural construct limiting what literature can be. That people who are if we think of the book as the idea that we're comparing ourselves to or being part of, then I think that's actually also culturally incorrect, because books are a And I always have to say this. I think books are wonderful. I love books. I read books all the time, but they really don't exist. They're kind of a temporary cultural artifact that's only been around for a short period of time. And human beings desire and need to express themselves and to consume other people's expressions are on another level than simply the form of that creation.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think when the written word is taken onto a digital canvas, really, I mean, text itself, it sort of gains different things than it does when it's just sat there on a page, really. You can do different things with it. It's almost like it gains extra attributes, not least the visual side. So it can be literally visually manipulated and animated over time. And I think these things, the whole idea of trying to read something that moves or changes or you may come back to and it's then different, you know, these are things that are not in the traditional reader's head at all as being possibilities, and they would just irritate them more than enhance their experience, really.
Yeah, I think that's true. There's the linearity of the narrative is broken by the digital experience, but if what you like is linear experience, then what you're doing is not really going to appeal to that person. But I think that it doesn't have to be a literal yes no experience either. It's possible to enjoy linear narrative and also enjoy a kind of interactive modality that is less clearly linear.
Yes, that's right. They can coexist, and I think that's what a lot of people don't seem to get at the moment. I don't know why.
No, we read different kinds. That's again. I was sort of thinking about, you know, Facebook and YouTube. I can read a book today and then turn on the computer tonight and spend the whole evening consuming digitally. So. Yeah. It doesn't mean that I'm going to stop reading books, and it doesn't mean that if I like a linear narrative today, I can't enjoy a non-linear narrative tomorrow.
Sure, exactly, yeah.
You know, so, but I think that there is, we're in, as you know, it's fairly obvious, we're in a tremendous period of transition, and I think that the nature of culture is being changed constantly. So the people who are, you know, who are experiencing that are experiencing challenges to their expectations at the same time as they're looking at new forms of communication and trying to figure out where they fit in and how we operate in this context. So I think it does create tensions that sometimes cause people to reject new ideas simply because they're tired of constantly having to deal with new ideas.
Yes, that's true. Yeah,
and but over the course of time, I think we change more than we realize, and that we're more able to adapt to these different forms of cultural expression than we realize. I love the work that you're doing. I think it's really important, and I'm very pleased that I discovered dreaming methods. I think that maybe some of the people who are listening today will be able to go visit your website. It's dreamingmethods.com. And I really think, it's something that I hope other people will discover and enjoy. This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing business or publishing industry, books, authors, anything that comes to mind. I've been talking to Andy Campbell through the great virtue of Skype. Who's in England while I'm in the United States. And I really appreciate your time, Andy.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.